The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
As the season of literary log rolling rolls to its close, we take a satirical look at five of the big books of the year with The Guardian's John Crace and try to digest what they reveal about the state we're in at the end of 2015. Today's digested read is The Poems of T.S. Eliot, the annotated texts, edited by Christopher Ricks and Jim McHugh, a two-volume monster of critical erudition which tells you everything you didn't realise you needed to know about the poetic output of the modernist master.
The Poems of T.S. Eliot, the annotated texts, edited by Christopher Ricks and Jim McHugh, the digested read.
The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock.
1.
In the room the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo.
2.
I have measured out my life with coffee spoons.
3. Commentary. 1. Ralph Hodgson has suggested the J stands for Joseph, though other commentators have made a more convincing case for James. The use of the initial mirrors Eliot's own struggles over his name. In the earliest versions of the poem, Eliot first signs himself Thomas S. Eliot, then T. Stearns Eliot, before formalising his authorial poetic as T. S. Eliot. 2. Conan Doyle was adamant that Michelangelo referred to the Italian Renaissance painter and sculptor. 12 years of close textual study have led us to conclude that this is indeed the most likely explanation. But some critics have been more hesitant about jumping to conclusions. Tristram Make a Name for Himself of the University of Texas has suggested Eliot was subconsciously alluding to a teenage mutant ninja turtle. 3. Much as Eliot liked to consider himself a naturalised Englishman, the use of coffee spoons betrays his American roots. A true Englishman measures his life out in teaspoons. Cf. Ode on an English Teaspoon by John Keats, English poet, 1795 to 1821.
The Wasteland.
1.
April
2.
Is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring
3.
Dull roots with spring rain.
Commentary. The title of the poem has been the subject of much contention. Jesse L. Watson was convinced the title alluded to his wasting of the land, while Thomas Malory, 1405 to 71, believed Eliot to have been guilty of plagiarising The Wasty Londy from La Morte d'Arthur. TSE was insistent on both the use of the word the and the gap between waste and land. In the earliest written versions of the text, TSE left 10 millimetres between waste and land, suggestive to some he intended the title to be The Waste Land. 2. According to Stephen Spender, April is not the cruelest month at all, as February is far crueler. Spender believes TSE was well aware of this and that the first line was just a bit of a joke and that the whole poem should be read as a forerunner to the works of Pere Mairs. Andrew Marvell, English poet 1621 to 78, makes much the same case by pointing out that had TSE been using the Julian calendar, the poem would have begun in August. 3. Many modern scholars assert that the comma before the last word of each of the opening three lines, followed by a distinctive gerund, was deliberately written by TSE to create a startling driving urgency. Analysis of the handwritten first draft shows this view to be misplaced, as the lines had so many crossings out in them that it was force majeure that created the opening effect, as he had just run out of space.
Oh, The Four Quartets.
1.
In my beginning is my end.
2.
We shall not cease from exploration.
3.
And the end of all our exploring.
Commentary. 1. This is merely circumstantial speculation. Vivian Elliott always insisted there was a lost fifth quartet, Chipping Norton, which was TSE's masterpiece, and that Valerie had burnt it. Hence the reference to burnt Norton. C.R. and J. McSee spent many years pointlessly searching for this manuscript. 2. As Robert Graves observed, this is not strictly true, as the poem East Coker goes on for pages and pages thereafter. 3. There is an ongoing court case between William Blake, 1757 to 1827, and TSE over this usage. Blake believed TSE to have been trying to copy his poem, Jerusalem, in order to sell it to the English Rugby Football Union for a profit of 25 shillings.
McCavity, the Mystery Cat. McCavity's
1.
A mystery cat. He's called the Hidden Paw, for he's the master criminal
2.
Who can defy the law.
Commentary. 1. Believed to refer to Ronald McCavity, who attended Milton Academy 2 years behind TSE, though Elizabeth Trussell of 9 Mornington Crescent has argued it is more likely to be Ronald's older brother, Gerald. 2. Conan Doyle was certain TSE was referencing his character Moriarty, but Valerie Elliott was adamant it referred to Andrew Lloyd Webber, whose musical Cats she could not stand. As Faber and Favour would have been broke long ago without ALW, and we would never have been given the money to complete this textual analysis, CR and J. McSee are inclined to the Doylean view. The digested reed digested. I have measured out my life with matchsticks.
1.
Commentary.
1.
Believed to be an allusion to the difficulty John Crace had in keeping his eyes open.
That was John Crace, aided by Susanna Tresilian, in John's digested read of the poems of T.S. Eliot. He joins us now in the studio with Observer critic Robert McCrum. John, that matchstick line's a bit of a killer. Was it really that boring?
In part. The thing to realise about these two volumes is that the footnotes are at least 20 times longer than the original texts. And so while some of them are very illuminating and sort of the sort of stuff you would want to know, you do feel that there is a sort of train spotterish completism to this that goes well beyond the realms of what any ordinary scholar would want to know.
Robert, who is going to buy and read these books?
Well, not me or John, obviously. librarians, scholars. I mean, I think I take John's point. I mean, I've got the original collected. When I say the original, the first time it was done, it's collected plays and poems of Tessa. And it's a slim volume. It's about 300 pages, and it's all you need. And I grew up with it, and it's one that's got a Bertolt Volpe design cover, and it cost, I think, 15 shillings. And now you've got this, which is... I mean, I take my hat off to you for reading the footnotes, because there are an awful lot of them. And it's about 3-1, isn't it? Or 4-1?
Oh, no, it's more than that.
More than that. Yes,
I think it's about 20-1, because his actual output of poems is actually quite slender.
But what you have is you do have... This is the last word. I mean, it's been done now. It could have been done online, but anyway, it's been done in print, and there it is, whatever it is, 40 quid for the book.
80 quid for two books.
80 quid for two, yes. Yeah. It's a lot. You know, if you're an Elliot Trainspotter, I mean, the other interesting thing is that it's now 50 years since he died, and his reputation has survived. Most poets, they go down, don't they?
Yeah.
And then they come back if they're any good. But he's gone on building, and he's now this giant figure from the 20th century. He's the supreme.
Well, is that true? Do you think he's as big now as he was 20
Probably
years
not,
ago.
But certainly more than 20. Yeah, I think he's bigger than now than he was 20 years ago. But he's still enormous, and he's like the Pope.
Do you buy that?
I mean, I defer to Robert. I mean, I'm not qualified to say where he stands in the pantheon of England
poetry.
Way,
neither of us, you know, we're all readers.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's what you have to ask. a 25-year-old, 18-year-old.
I know that there have been, people have asked 18, 19-year-olds who don't even know who he is. Mm. Or if they do, they know him through the musical Cats.
Yeah, that's true. But I think if you're over, what should we say, if you're over 40, the chances are that The Wasteland will mean something, Love Song, Alfred J. Prufrock will mean something. And he's quoted, you know, his words were used. I always think the one on the test is, are a writer's words used in a newspaper leader without attribution? When that happens, it happens with Woodhouse, it happens with Chandler, it happens with Eliot, it happens with Auden a bit. You know, once that's being used freely, then you've got something which is part of the currency, it's in the bloodstream.
These volumes do have some sort of little bombs in them, don't they? Particularly the three erotic poems to the tall girl that he wrote to his second wife, Valerie.
And also the dirty limericks.
Oh, the dirty limericks, King Bolo and his big black queen, which are arguably racist as well as dirty and pretty unpleasant. And they were published for private circulation among his friends.
Valerie, his second wife, was always rather nervous about them. She thought they were amusing. And I think that allowed them to go in. But you know, also, I think, you know, they humanise him. He's a remote, rather dusty figure, isn't he?
Yeah, I would sort of add in two things. One, what would T.S. Eliot himself have made of this? Because he was, I think if I'm right, famously contemptuous of critics trying to analyse his work. And the only person he would allow to see his texts and to comment on them was Ezra Pound. And for the rest, he kind of considered criticism to be, you know, the poems, if you didn't get the poems, then tough luck, really.
And the notes to The Wasteland, some of them are slightly tongue-in-cheek, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's a stanza of The Wasteland in this, isn't there, that is not widely...
There's a new line, they put a new line in, which I can't quote from memory, but there's a new line. So if you're a Wasteland obsessive, there's a wonderful new line to examine and explore.
I'm going to bring you back to these poems to the tall girl. I'm going to quote from them. I love a tall girl when she sits on my knee, she with nothing on and I with nothing on. I can just take her nipple in my lips and stroke it with my tongue. And that's in a poem called How the Tall Girl and I Play Together. And he famously took a vow of chastity in 1928, didn't he, while he was still married to his rather unfortunate first wife, Vivian. What is this going to do to his reputation? Do we really want to rummage around in someone's underwear drawer
this? I knew Valerie quite well before. I mean, her last years were very sad. She had dementia. But when she was younger, she was very flirtatious. She was great fun. She loved a drink and she was entertaining. And I can see, I mean, I'm sure she cheered him up. I think his middle years were very gloomy. I think she cheered him up. It's clear that they had quite an active sex life.
But should we know about it? Is this something we need to know about now?
I'm sure he'd be horrified. I mean, he famously prohibited a biography, and there has never been a full-blown biography. And I'm sure he'd be horrified, and I think for him it would illustrate the problems of going over someone's afterlife with a fine-tooth comb.
I think Robert's right. There is also the timing of this, which is that so since Valerie died, the gloves have been off. Valerie was very much a sort of keeper of the flame, and nothing went out about T.S. Eliot without her say-so. So, I mean, there were whole lots of his earlier relationships with Vivian and with another woman who's...
Emily Hale.
Emily Hale.
Which
is still embargoed. So that will all... The complete biography of T.S. Eliot is still to be written and to be de-embargoed, really.
But we are entitled to ask, does he deserve it? Does he deserve a life? Does he deserve these notes? How great is he? Well, I'd say he was pretty great. I mean, he dominated the 20th century Anglo-American poetry scene in a colossal way. He shaped the lives of poets right the way down to Ted Hughes, the late Ted Hughes. I mean, even, you know, even contemporary poets, I'm sure, will be in his shadow. He's a great modernist.
And we've got a bit of a neo-modernism movement going on at the moment, haven't we?
I think one definition of a classic is, does it continue to speak to the later generations? And I think, I mean, the fact that John has paid the great tribute of one of his digested reads illustrates that it is still speaking to us.
Interestingly, it's not the first time you've done Eliot, is it? We did him a couple of years ago.
Letters.
Yeah, so you keep coming back to him.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated by him.
And you couldn't do it if there wasn't a resonance.
No.
Could you?
Exactly. I mean, for a satirist or a parodist, there has to be a central reference point of sort of cultural communality, where people can have their own versions or mental versions of T.S. Eliot and his work to refer back to the satire and the parody so that they can create comparisons and get the jokes, because otherwise it's just a whole load of meaningless statements, really.
Well, thank you very much to both of you. And the poems of T.S. Eliot, The Annotated Texts, edited by Christopher Ricks and Jim McHugh, is published by Faber.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options.
but if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are the Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.